Hello and welcome to a new episode of the Nerd Stash Show. My name is Taylor Cole and I will be your host today on this very special episode. We don't have any news to cover this week. We are hosting our first ever episode of Clash at the Stash in podcast form. So, what is Clash at the Stash? Clash at the Stash was an old staff collaboration series over at the Nerd Stash, where two of our writers would debate over two nerd culture topics and make a case why their pick is better. At the end of each installment, we would have three judges determine the winner based on what was said and how entertaining the competitors were. These judges were just other members from our writing staff. Even though this series was for entertainment purposes only, we actually even tracked wins and losses and even had a championship edition of Clash at the Stash as well. Some of our old installments included topics like the Mario franchise versus Zelda franchise, Tomb Raider versus Uncharted, the Star Wars sequels versus the Star Wars prequels, so on and so forth. We're going to be rebooting this as a monthly series in podcast form across both the Nerd Stash Show and Nerds Talk Movies. So all of our old topics are back on the table, and we have a lot of future ideas we can't wait to get into. But that's another problem for future us. Let's talk about this week's installment, the Resident Evil series versus the Soulsborne series. I will be in the corner of the Resident Evil franchise, and in the corner of Soulsborne, we have Riley Logue. Riley, how are you doing? How are you feeling?
I'm feeling overly confident, I think, is the best way to put this. I've got my case ready. I've got it locked in, and I'm ready.
I don't think you should be, because I have a fantastic case.
All right.
And I think I'm going to crush it. I know, a little bit of trash talk here, but I'm pretty confident in myself here.
Bring it.
But, Riley, we can't just be arguing by ourselves. That'd be really weird if we did that.
Yeah.
We needed someone to determine a clear and decisive winner. So, as the first ever judge for this iteration of Clash at the Stash, we have Michael Mosley. Like the old series, we're allowing for a little bit of personal bias, but Michael, you have to keep an open mind and mostly judge this thing right down the middle. Michael, are you ready for this? And what are you expecting to see from this episode?
Well, I'm going to be 100% honest, of course. Riley, I'm sorry, lass, but you're really going to have to come with your A game on this one, because I will admit, I do have a bit of a bias here. I do enjoy Resident Evil, more modern Resident Evil, and I never really got into the whole Souls games. So,
sure.
So heads up right now, you're really going to have to bring your A game, but I'm still going to be open about it because I did not tell this to Tyler earlier, but I was not a fan of Resident Evil until a certain point in the franchise. So, yeah.
That, Michael, you have no idea how much that might affect my case. I cannot tell you how much it's going to include talking about the early Resident Evil games, but I don't want to give it all away.
Oh, so that way, all right, from the sound of that, then maybe the playing field is a little more even than we thought.
I know it's going to be an uphill battle, but I think I have a strong case.
I have no idea how this is going to go. I'm so pumped for it. This could be awesome. This could be a train wreck. I can't wait to see, but I bet you'll be exciting to listen to. So we're about ready to start, and I just want to give a quick overview of what everyone can expect from this episode format-wise. I also want to apologize ahead of time because I am 100% sure I'm going to be repeating myself at certain points. I just wanted to have this set of rules in place to where I can just copy and paste it to every Clash at the Stash we do. So here we go. We'll start every Clash with our quote-unquote opening statements. This is basically our thesis telling the judge and everyone listening what we're hoping to accomplish with our case. We will then each make our respective cases. We can use facts, logic, personal stories, etc. to prove our points. You can even go after your opponent's topic if you so choose. All that matters is what we say and how entertaining we are. The only rule is that we cannot straight up lie about something we're claiming to be a fact. Basically, if we're throwing out stats, you can't just make it up. So common sense stuff here. You also have to source where you get some stats from as well. After one competitor is done making their case, the door is open for the other competitor and the judge to freely talk about it. These can be compliments, questions, or any problems you had with the case. We will then move on to the next competitor, rinse and repeat the same process. When both competitors are done with their cases, we will then have one final chance to make a plea to the judge with our closing statements. After the closing statements, the judge will then make their final verdict on who they think won based on what was said and how entertaining they were. As I said before, this series is meant for entertainment purposes only, so there is a little bit of room for personal bias. But try to keep an open mind and call it down the middle. Finally, the winner of Clash at Stash will close out this podcast episode. Is everybody ready?
I am ready.
Well, I would do my best to justice fairly, but I'm ready.
Riley, why don't you kick it off with your opening statement?
Sure.
Also, Michael, from here on out, I'm going to pass off the hosting duties to you so everything flows a little better. So when Riley is done, it's just up to you to make sure it doesn't go off the rails. You've seen me host this thing. I'm sure you can do a way better job.
Well, we're about to find out.
All right. So, as you might gather from this episode, this is the horror-themed episode, right? So each of us are picking a horror series. So for my horror series, I'm going with the Soulsborne genre. Although I'll be focusing on Bloodborne and the opening segments of the Demon's Souls remaster, as I have yet to play any Dark Souls game or Sekiro yet. Bloodborne was the first Soulsborne I ever played, and as such, the dread that was instilled in me in my first trip through Yharnam was palpable. I had no idea how to play a Soulsborne game, and as a result, every corner of the opening few hours seemed to be dripping with danger that I was not prepared to face. But the world was begging to be explored. Similarly, as I've begun the first few hours through Boletaria, which is the setting in Demon's Souls, even though I thought I had achieved mastery of the genre after spending many, many, many hours in Bloodborne, I couldn't be more incorrect. The skills that I had acquired in Bloodborne barely transferred over to Demon's Souls due to its slower and heavier nature in terms of gameplay. But still, I find myself absolutely enraptured in the mystery and dark beauty of the world. That is the beauty of the Soulsborne genre, that you are both simultaneously afraid to continue your journey through an intensely hostile and unforgiving setting that you most certainly aren't prepared for, with every kind of enemy you can think of, from rats to spiders and crows to brain-sucking Lovecraftian nightmares and literal sentient piles of skull and bones popping out of caskets in Bloodborne, to fire-breathing dragons and a gigantic knight the size of a tower in Demon's Souls. And at the same time, those settings are beautifully designed mysteries with beautiful architecture and branching paths that contain secrets and treasures waiting for whomever is brave and patient enough to achieve mastery over the world. Not only that, but play any Soulsborne game, especially Bloodborne, and you will quickly come to understand that the games are paying an enormous homage to the entire genre of horror. Bloodborne is unapologetic in its absolute adoration of Lovecraft and Bram Stoker, while Demon's Souls presents a more high fantasy rooted in reality setting, while still presenting a sense of danger and dread. Which Demon's Souls itself is heavily influenced by the Kingsfield series and the manga Berserk. These games wear their horror influences on their sleeves and pay massive respect to them, while not lifting influences wholesale, and instead contributing their own unique twist on them. That is my opening statement.
Okay. Esteemed listeners and the ever honorable Judge Mosley, this is our first ever episode of Clash at the Stash in podcast form. to me, this is a big deal. When I created this series a few years ago, my goal was to host a staff collaboration series that was unique. Something kind of cheesy and dumb, but at the same time, I wanted this series to be something that's entertaining. Not just for the viewers, but for our writers too. This was an opportunity for all of us just to be massive nerds again, without necessarily worrying about things like SEO and viewer traffic. I also wanted this to be something you wouldn't see on high-profile sites like IGN. With these clashes, we would take a look at various pop culture topics and debate over just one simple question. Which one is better? Stuff like Mario vs. Luigi. A hilarious battle that saw one competitor stake a claim that Mario was nothing more than a ruthless killing machine, and that Luigi was the true unsung hero of the Nintendo brand. Or another clash involving Silent Hill and the franchise I'm defending today, Resident Evil. This was a blow-for-blow discussion over two of the most legendary horror game franchises in history. Today, we're talking about Resident Evil versus Soulsborne. The latter, admittedly, has some disturbing and scary moments in its various games. There's no denying that. There's also no denying how important, successful, and popular this franchise is to so many people, and in the gaming industry itself. And I'm sure my opponent will do a great job at telling you about all that. Still, I feel like I'm lying to you all. This isn't a clash. It's barely even a debate. To me, I think this is a coronation. At the end of this episode, there will be no denying that Resident Evil is by far the better series. And here's the kicker. No controllers or TVs will have to be broken for me to prove it. That's the end of mine.
So now that you both have your opening statements, what I would like to hear is, how do they fit in the horror genre? What makes them peak horror?
Who do you want to go first, Riley or me?
I would continue with Riley.
Okay. So, my first case as to what makes this series the defining horror series, or the better horror series, over Resident Evil. I think that the Soulsborne gameplay inherently lends itself to horror. Think about it. You're a lone soldier, or hunter, or whatever, making your way through a completely unknown world, and you are just dropped into a very unforgiving world and asked to make sense of it with little or no guidance. Bloodborne and Demon's Souls are literally like a dream. Scratch that, they're like a nightmare, where you aren't quite sure of the logic, and once you figure out the logic of one area and achieve mastery of that area, you move on to a completely different kind of nightmare. The natural tension that arises from limited checkpoints contributes to the fear as well, where you are never sure how much further you have to go until you reach your checkpoint, and what dangers lay ahead of you. I personally define a horror series' effectiveness in terms of whether or not a game can sustain throughout its entirety a feeling of tension and uncertainty in the player. And I think the gameplay of the Souls series is perfectly suited for this. I always felt one step behind on my journey through Bloodborne because I was underpowered, because I didn't understand the effective fighting strategies, I didn't yet understand the rally system, I had no idea of proper spacing and timing, I didn't know where I was supposed to be going. And similarly, now I'm having those same experiences with the first few hours of Demon's Souls. I don't understand the game yet, and I don't understand the world. I feel alone, naked and afraid, totally unprepared for danger. I can't express to you the feeling of uncertainty and fear I had the first time I encountered the red fire-breathing dragon and blue tail-swiping dragon in Demon's Souls. I didn't know how to evade the fire-breathing attack. I didn't know if I was supposed to attack them. And when I figured out the answers to those questions through trial and error, I was still uncertain of the correct execution to ensure I made it through without dying. And that is part of the reason that these games are so brilliant. It's because they are so filled with uncertainty and danger that you never feel certain about anything, and a gruesome death is always waiting around the corner. This feeling is punctuated perfectly by the insane boss fights that the series is known for. Even when you feel that you have achieved mastery of a specific segment of the world, you know that at the end there is going to be an insane boss fight, and the chances of killing that boss on your first try, on your first run, are very low. I don't think I've ever beat a boss on the first try through my first run of Bloodborne. And in Demon's Souls, while I was able to defeat the first demon on my first try, I don't think I'll be able to do that for the rest of the game. Some of the boss fights in Bloodborne have produced a sense of anxiety and fear that I don't think any game will ever be able to touch. For example, the Orphan of Kos, widely considered to be the biggest, toughest baddie in all of Bloodborne, took me about 10 hours before I was able to defeat him. That is 10 straight hours of trial and error, figuring out his various attack patterns and what the best opportunities for me to attack were versus when I should be conservative and play it safe, trying to find that perfect balance between aggro and defense. Each subsequent fight I had against him, I felt like I was getting a little bit better, and towards the end of my time spent on him, in the final few attempts, every time I was filled with fear, because while I was pretty sure I knew how to defeat him, he would always do something unexpected in a key moment that I wasn't instantly ready for and I would end up dead. My final attempt against him, when he was in his second and obviously more dangerous form, and I had him nearly dead, my hands were sweating and my heart was racing because I still wasn't sure if I could finish him out or if he would do something again that I wasn't exactly prepared for in that moment. At a key moment, I decided almost out of a sense of instinct to aggressively aggro him, even though this put me in closer proximity to him and increased the danger to my character. I was afraid that if I didn't finish him out, he would kill me some other way, probably with his lunging or lightning attacks. And when that decision in the key moment finally paid off for me and he was killed, I screamed. But the point was, even on my final run against him, I wasn't sure that that was going to be my final run until he was down. Even in the last few seconds of the fight, I didn't know if it was the final attempt, and that uncertainty, while for some may produce a sense of frustration, for me it produced a sense of fear and anxiety and excitement that is unmatched in any other horror game or horror series that I've played. And there were many boss fights in Bloodborne that were the exact same story. Lady Maria of the Astral Clock Tower, Lawrence the First Vicar, even Vicar Amelia on my first run. And might I add, some of the boss fights in Demon's Souls, same thing. The first time I faced off against the Tower Knight, I had no idea how I was supposed to kill him. So, that is my first case.
Ooh, I don't know. Tyler, you got some competition, man. You think you can top that with your rebuttal?
I do. I do just want to mention here, I thought Riley really had a good point talking about the over and over fear. Like, part of the Soulsborne series, it has this fear of you can't pass this. Like, you have to literally be perfect. Like, that is part of the... It feels like part of the game. You know what I mean? And that is a very interesting aspect to go about it.
Oh, thank you.
Alright. So, ever since being introduced to the gaming world in the 1990s, Resident Evil has absolutely dominated the horror game genre. But why? The early titles had clunky tank controls that made it difficult to have full command over your player, and a fixed camera view that some people really didn't care for. And that's the best way I can put that, without throwing some expletives in there. The dialogue was cheesy at best, with a narrative that was more convoluted than the damn Star Wars sequels. So, why is this franchise still kicking? Better yet, why did it become one of the greatest gaming franchises of all time? Hilariously enough, the answers to all those questions are its quote-unquote flaws. Let me explain, starting with the franchise's overall narrative and some of its dialogue. For the most part, people can buy into ridiculous concepts. It's not that hard. I mean, look at some of the most popular movies of all time. Jurassic Park is about dinosaurs coming back to life via cloning. Terminator is about a dystopian future where machines take over. The human survivors then use time travel, of all things, as an attempt to stop it from ever happening. Then we have the 20-plus movies in the MCU, probably soon to be 30, 40-plus here in the next few years. And all of those movies are just absurd when you sit down to think about it. But those crazy movie concepts don't matter. The general audience, including people who aren't as invested in stuff like this as you or me, can buy into those movies and those concepts. Resident Evil isn't on the same level or even in the same galaxy as any of those things I just mentioned. I'm not here to make that claim because that would be absolutely insane and probably grounds for disqualification, if I'm being honest with you. But the same basic rule still applies. To get someone on board with a ridiculous concept, regardless of what it is, a movie, series, game, book, whatever, you have to, at the very least, make an interesting story and give the audience entertaining characters to follow. At its very core, Resident Evil does that very well. At the start of Resident Evil 1, you are immediately engrossed by the premise. Other than a few of your teammates, you as Chris Redfield or Jill Valentine are cut off from the outside world and stuck in this seemingly abandoned mansion. There's a sense of unrest and creepiness as you walk the corridors of the Spencer Mansion, wondering what the hell is about to happen next. Remember when I mentioned the clunky tank controls and the camera views in the earlier titles? Well, it's gonna sound stupid, but it kinda adds to the uneasiness you feel throughout the game. You don't have total fluid control. The camera is always fixated in a way to where you don't see all the action. The player is filled with a sense of claustrophobia as a result. Furthermore, Resident Evil's earlier titles were far more focused on the slower-paced gameplay experience, where the user must contemplate what they have in their limited arms arsenal and how they use it. By the way, I don't have time to get into this later, but the recent Resident Evil 2 and Resident Evil 3 remakes do such an excellent job at recreating the feeling of isolation and slower paced combat, even with the over-the-shoulder camera. Sorry about that, let's get back to my point. Despite it being flawed by today's standards, those quote-unquote flaws of the OG Resident Evil all actually added to the atmosphere in that mansion. The story was mysterious and intriguing, but people stuck around due to the core gameplay, and that will continue through the earlier titles in the franchise as well. And sure, the franchise's story may be messy, and it has never been famous for its subtlety. But it's not trying to be any of those things. This is a B-level horror movie franchise in video game form. And that's why I love it so much, even as a person who isn't a massive fan of the horror genre. If you need more evidence, look at its characters and dialogue. Jill Valentine, Chris Redfield, Leon S. Kennedy, Claire Redfield, and Ethan Winters are all beloved characters because we are going with them on this horrific nightmare. They're also just a lot of fun to be around because of the dialogue. And that's why so many people, including myself, love that cheesy dialogue. By the way, I don't have time to read a lot of these out because I did copy and paste them here. I'm going to leave a link to a few articles to like the old Resident Evil dialogue and some of the cheesiness of it. I highly recommend people check it out because you'll get things like, quote, "That was too close. You were almost a Jill sandwich." Or, quote, "We should start from the first floor, okay? And Jill, here's a lockpick. It might be handy if you, the master of unlocking, take it with you." Just, you know, things like that. Even though I'm here to tell you why Resident Evil is the better franchise, I have to be honest with you and admit when I think the series fumbles the ball. And Judge Michael Mosley, I think this might be where you lose me a little bit. As time went on, the franchise would evolve, for better or worse. The iconic Resident Evil 4 introduced the over-the-shoulder camera view that I absolutely adored. It also seemed to be a little more action-focused than earlier titles. Since that time, fans became split on the franchise. Some found the new action-focused games to be a lot of fun, while many others wanted to see the series return to its roots. How you feel about this shift in tone in the action-focused games is completely up to you. For me, I kind of found them to be a bit generic. Gone were the days of terror and dread, the lovable characters and the B-horror movie storylines. Now the series would be like a stereotypical action series from Michael Bay. We even had Chris Redfield punch a fucking boulder, which, truth be told, was pretty hilarious. I'll be the first to admit that after Resident Evil 6, I thought the series was done for. But here's the thing. Just like the zombies, Resident Evil came back from the dead. Resident Evil 7 brought a much-needed breath of fresh air to the franchise, with a renewed emphasis on B-movie level horror and making the player feel isolated, just like the earlier games. It also, once again, changed its camera views. Now, the series will be shown in the first-person perspective, putting the player even closer to the terror ahead of them. That ability to change and adapt cannot be understated. It's one of the main reasons why this series has survived for so long. But it's not the reason why people remember Resident Evil, or why everyone still thinks so fondly of it. Above all else, what Resident Evil does better than any other horror game is creating moments. Everyone who played Resident Evil 2 remembers when they encountered the Licker for the first time. Everyone who played Resident Evil 1 remembers the first zombie in the game, and of course, when the dog jumps through the window. Resident Evil 4 players remember when they encountered the chainsaw guy for the first time. Resident Evil 7 had so many great moments with Jack Baker stalking you throughout the Baker estate. And even though I didn't like the action-focused games, a lot of people still remember and love the moment where Chris Redfield punches a fucking boulder into lava. In my opening statement, I said that this wasn't a debate. It was a coronation. I think it's time we take a step back and we look at Resident Evil for what it is. It's not just better than the Soulsborne series. It's the greatest horror game franchise of all time.
Oh my. Alright, well, you put a lot of thought into that one.
I tried.
Alright, so after that heavy exposition, let's do something a little lighter, a little more fun. Creature design. If it's anything a good horror game has, it's good creature design. So, Riley, tell me why the Souls series, especially Soulsborne, has the best creature design.
Yeah, I touched on this a little bit in my opening statements, but I think that the Soulsborne series has the best creature design in almost in terms of movies or books or whatever. I think the Soulsborne series has some of the most unique and interesting enemy designs. In in terms of, like I was talking about earlier, it takes influences from its horror sources, such as Lovecraft and Bram Stoker and others, but it doesn't copy them completely. If you look at any of the enemies from Bloodborne, and this is something that I think is a boon to the Soulsborne series, where I feel like the Resident Evil series mainly is known for zombies. Now, I know, especially in the newer series, and even before that, they're now focusing on different enemy types than just zombies. But let's be fair. Most of Resident Evil is just zombies, whereas a game like Bloodborne has wolfmen, rats, spiders, crows, Lovecraftian horror tentacle monsters. Demon's Souls has dragons and knights, and, you know, while those are higher fantasy, they still are grounded in a dark, dark reality. And so I think personally that the Resident Evil series has kind of stale and not that interesting enemy design. Now, I know that you'll come back and say that there are some interesting enemies in there, but for the most part, what do people remember? They remember the zombies, and that's fine, but zombies are a little boring and a little overwrought, and I would argue that even in the time when the first Resident Evil game came out, they were kind of overdone. I mean, let's not forget, by that time, George Romero had three or four of, you know, some of the most classic zombie movies released. Same with, you know, other directors as well. And so, you know, I think we tend to look back on those days as like, oh, zombies weren't really as overwrought as they are now. But I don't think that's really the case. And so that is why I think that just in terms of sheer variety and as well as creature design, the Soulsborne series takes the cake. No problem on that, I believe.
All right. So what would be your favorite creature in the Soul/Born series?
I think my favorite creatures, I can't think of specific creatures, but I can think of creature types. And playing through Bloodborne, the kind of beginning of it is sort of set in this like mid-Victorian city where it's all very like gothic horror elements, right? You have the wolfmen and you have, you know, things like that, things that you'd expect to find from old-timey, I'll just call it like old-timey British horror, right? Where the game really gets me is when you are facing off against Lovecraftian inspired enemies. I didn't know that those types of enemies existed in the game, and they don't really pop up until you go to the forest. And when I saw that, all bets were off, because I could tell that what I value in horror and what the people who made this game value in horror aligned in that I'm not such a fan of the classic horror elements, although I do like them. I'm much more of a fan of something more than that. And I feel that they provided that, where their creature designs are unlike anything I've ever seen and totally terrifying. I mean, just one that I mentioned in my opening statement is literally a pile of sentient bones crushed together in this gooey, gross mass, and it's popping out of a casket. And that thing is fucking terrifying. I can also remember the giant pigs in Bloodborne when they, you know, would charge at you and kill you in one hit when very early on in the game if you didn't really know what you were doing, which, Bloodborne being my first Soulsborne game, I didn't know what I was doing, and so that scared the shit out of me. I would think also that the bosses are, you know, some of the scariest. I mean, in terms of design and just their sheer toughness, their sheer unwillingness to concede. I touched on it before, but the Orphan of Kos is sort of like this moon presence, weird, kind of slimy fish creature. Also in Bloodborne, there's a gigantic spider called Rom. And so, you know, when you go through Bloodborne, and I'm sure it's the same, and I can already tell this, it's kind of the same in the opening hours of Demon Souls, although I'm not super familiar with the Dark Souls series yet. You see different types of enemies, and the sheer variety and creativeness that is put into that, I think the Resident Evil series can't touch on.
Wow, that last part was a stinger.
It's
no,
it's factually inaccurate. Just saying.
Taylor can go ahead. Yeah.
Okay. So, my opponent tells you that Resident Evil is nothing but zombies. It's all people remember. And just like I just mentioned in the main case, when you asked what makes it such a great horror game franchise, I mentioned that it gives players moments. And a lot of those moments don't involve regular zombies. Like the liquor, like the dog, like the snake. There's a snake in the damn game. And not only that, you have no other antagonists like Mr. X, like the tyrant, like the nemesis. And you also go, well, zombies are a bit played out. Very, very good point, Riley. That is an excellent point. Which is why, in Resident Evil 7, they're not zombies. They're molded. They're a different creature entirely. And not only that, they're not really the main threat. The main threat are the Baker family. These weird, like, bayou kind of villains who just, they look creepy as hell and they're stalking you throughout the mansion. And every which way you turn, you have a chance to run into them. And guess what? The game, or the franchise, even went farther with Resident Evil Village. It said, fine, you don't really want molded. We don't really want to do zombies. We're going to do werewolves. We will give you werewolves in a video game. And they did a very good job with it. And not only that, it went, oh, you love the Baker family. We're going to give you four other villains to latch on to. And each of them looks so terrifying or so disturbing in their own ways. Characters like Salvatore Moreau, who looks like just the most repulsive creature ever designed, in my opinion. Then you have Donna Beneviento, who is pretty much controlling a puppet doll, which is terrifying. And, of course, then we have the very tall vampire lady. We're not going to get into all that. Let's just say that the internet had a lot of fun when this character was introduced. And just, I think Resident Evil has done such a great job over the years at adapting. They kind of know when to change things up. And we saw that. We saw with the different kind of viruses that are in the game. We had the regular zombies, then we had more the infected, we had the chainsaw zombie. I believe his name is Dr. Salvatore, I believe. And you have all these other creatures, and it just keeps adapting and adapting to make things fresh.
I have some rebuttals.
Okay, so before we get to that, what is your favorite creature in Resident Evil series?
Creature or antagonist? Like, would Jack Baker be a creature, I guess? Well, I think Jack Baker is one of the best villains they've had.
Well, when it comes to Resident Evil, yeah, pretty much all the antagonists has a thing where they become...
If we're going for like a main, like, and a pure antagonist, I'd probably go Jack Baker. If it was just a type of creature, it'd probably be the Licker.
The Licker's definitely infamous. Well, that and the dogs, of course.
And it's just because, honestly, as a kid, just seeing that scene, and that's what gets me every time.
Oh, I'm surprised you didn't say...
It's ingrained in my brain.
I'm surprised you didn't say, was it Walker? He's the one with the sunglasses, like, sunglasses everywhere.
Wesker.
Wesker. Walker.
I thought you were...
No.
Wesker's cool. Yeah, I did not care for the superpowers that you get.
Ah.
That part was a little...
And then, of course, there's Mr. X. Everybody knows Mr. X. So, Riley, you said you had a rebuttal.
Yeah, so I have some rebuttals just against, you know, a lot of the things that Taylor has said.
I shall allow it.
The Resident Evil series. So, I would like to thank my opponent for being very honest in his opening statements about the many issues with Resident Evil. Chief among them, I would say, is that if you are going to defend a series, you have to take all of the good and all of the bad. And there is a lot of bad in Resident Evil, which my opponent admitted, There's Resident Evil 5, Resident Evil 6. And not only is there bad, there is a lot of irrelevant titles. Because, to be fair, the series has been around for a long time. But let me just give you a little bit of a taste. Resident Evil The Mercenaries 3D, Resident Evil Genesis, Resident Evil The Umbrella Chronicles, Resident Evil Deadly, what does that say? Deadly Silence, Resident Evil Outbreak, Resident Evil...
Hey, Outbreak was good.
The Missions.
Right, I'll stand by that.
Sure. I will just say that the series is so extensive that there is a lot of bad. And I would argue that the titles that people consider to be classics are not as good as you... I don't consider them as good as many people think. Because I think one of the worst problems in the entire Resident Evil genre is its puzzles. Resident Evil 1, the original game, which came out on PlayStation 1, the puzzles were so difficult that they had to rework them into the GameCube version, and they're completely different puzzles in the GameCube version than on the PlayStation version because the puzzles were so bad. I would also say that, granted, in the beginning couple of hours of the first Resident Evil game, it is pretty scary. It is pretty, the atmosphere is palpable. But as you get into the game, you start finding these stupid-ass puzzles that take forever. And, you know, maybe I'm just really bad at puzzles, but I think that completely takes away from the feeling of fear. And for me, replaces it with a feeling of frustration. There are also... tends to be a point in Resident Evil games, and I'll take the first Resident Evil game as an example, where it ceases to be scary. Like in the first Resident Evil game, I feel like I was pretty scared, maybe, you know, through the beginning few hours, and then it just became a case of, I have to go here and get this key. I have to find the right color stone. I have to do this. I have to do that. I have to check to make sure that the painting is right. And, you know, all of these puzzles which take away, for me, from the fear. I would also say, I think those are my two main rebuttals. I would also say, in terms of creature design, I don't think that Resident Evil... while it does have more varied enemies than just zombies, I will grant you that, I don't think they are as creative as the enemies in the Soulsborne series. For example, you said that there's snakes and dogs, which, by the way, they're zombie dogs. So I still count those as zombies, but they're zombie dogs. I'll give you that.
But they're puppos, so it's different.
And you said there's snakes, and even in the newer series, right, the latest game, Resident Evil 8, has werewolves. Well, I think that's kind of the point for me, is that these games are taking influences just wholesale and using them. They're using zombies, they're using werewolves, and there's nothing wrong with that. But as a gigantic horror fan myself, the reason why I gravitate towards the Soulsborne series is because they're presenting a different side, a side that I don't really see much in modern media. And that side is, take the Demon Souls. I have never played a game where they made high fantasy and chivalry scary. And I think that they do that very well. I would also say, for Bloodborne, while yes, you could say that Lovecraft has come into main, modern popularity within the past 20 to 30 years, it's still something that I feel like only horror nerds really get into. And I could be wrong about that. But this is why I identify with the Soulsborne series way more than the Resident Evil series, and why I think it is a better series. Because if you look at the creature designs, they pay homage to their influences, but I don't think you can look at any creature from, you know, Demon Souls, with exception maybe of the dragons, or Bloodborne at all, and say that you honestly have seen something like that in exactly in any other game. It has such a... Each game and each series has such a unique world and design, and everything goes into that world design. The feeling, the architecture, the enemies, I just think it's way better designed than Resident Evil. And I think this leads into kind of my second case. I know I've been talking for a long time, so I'll keep it quick. The games in the Soulsborne genre that I am defending are the games from Software, right? Demon's Souls, the three Dark Souls games, Bloodborne, and Sekiro, and soon to be Elden Ring. There has not been a game from Software since Demon's Souls in the Soulsborne genre that has done poorly. Every single game is a layup. It is, I don't know what they're on over there, but every game has been perfectly executed. And usually when a series goes on for a while, and let's not forget, Demon's Souls came out in 2009, so you could say that the Souls series has been going on for 10 plus years at this point. You would think by now that they would have, you know, maybe a game that the fans maybe don't like. But no, I can't find any Soulsborne game from Software that the fans don't like. And so that is why I think it's a better series.
Judge Mosley, do you have any other categories for us to answer? I'm just curious.
A couple of things, nothing too serious, a little more lighthearted, at least it was supposed to. But you two really want to prove that your franchise is better.
Would you approve if I have a rebuttal here?
Oh no, please do.
My opponent is saying that the Soulsborne series doesn't have misses, that the Resident Evil series, it does. And that's something I have mentioned in the past as well. But there's one key thing that my opponent mentions, and that was the puzzles, and that was that it's more frustrating. And that is where I was laughing off mic, because the Soulsborne franchise is literally known for being frustrating. And I believe that no matter what, a Resident Evil can suck. It could be terrible, but it will be fun. If it could be the worst game in the series, but you will find some kind of enjoyment out of it because the gameplay loop is fairly fun. Other than one example, and I am sorry, I'm talking off the cuff, so I don't have this off the top of my head, but there was a game released a few years ago that was literally just like a random generic shooter. But other than that one title, I feel pretty confident in saying every Resident Evil game is fun, and I don't think you can say that about every Soulsborne game.
May I rebut Taylor's rebuttal?
Are you doing a rebuttal to a rebuttal?
I feel like it's going to be here all day.
Okay, so we'll save that rebuttal for the finale. But for now, let's go with the next topic.
Sure.
And it's one that's very decisive because, well, Resident Evil has been around for a long time. As you mentioned, back in the original PlayStation days, gameplay, you know, horror games, they're fun. You both mentioned a little bit about why gameplay matters for like your respected franchise, from the tank controls to the creatures and the way things have changed in both series, including towards Sekiro. So, what what is it about gameplay that makes your respected video game series top notch? Riley, please go first.
Sure. So I think that the Soulsborne games are a masterclass, in gameplay. And this kind of goes to my rebuttal of some of the things that Taylor was saying, where he was mentioning that the Soulsborne games are known for their frustration, which is true. In the beginning of the Soulsborne games, it can be very frustrating for players. But I think the difference between the Soulsborne frustration and the frustration that I have with a lot of puzzle elements and a lot of the more clunky things, especially in the earlier Resident Evil games, is that in Bloodborne, the answer is always there. It's just that you as a player have to develop the skill to complete those obstacles. It's never a frustrating moment, as I feel like in many Resident Evil games, the frustrating moment with puzzles is, for me at least, is that the answer isn't always there. And sometimes it feels like it's not a matter of skill, it's just, I think a lot of the puzzles in Resident Evil are the dumbest, most frustrating thing that I have come across in any video game. It almost feels like, well, who the hell would have thought of that, right? Like, I can't think of any specific examples off the top of my head. Actually, there is one that I can remember. In the first Resident Evil game, when you have to mix together all of the concoctions to create this antidote, or maybe it was a poison, I don't exactly remember. But I would disagree. I think in those moments in Resident Evil, I'm like, I just want to get back to like surviving. I don't want to do this puzzle, but I have to move forward. Whereas in the Soulsborne games, it's all about your execution as a player. Personally, I don't find the gameplay of Soulsborne games to be that frustrating. I think it's a little bit overblown, and let me tell you why. I think that people don't treat the Soulsborne games as what I consider them to be, which is literally just JRPGs. And the reason I say that is because, yes, it's frustrating when you get killed by, you know, big bad enemies. But in the beginning of Demon's Souls and in the beginning of Bloodborne, each game gives you ample opportunity to farm for blood echoes or souls, which you can use to get yourself to a point where the big bad enemies aren't so bad anymore. So there's an answer there for you. And if you don't want to farm, if you think that that's boring, which a lot of people do, to be fair, the game still allows you up to a certain point to finish your enemies through skill alone. Like in Bloodborne, in the beginning of Bloodborne, I had no idea of the rally system, which, if you don't know what the rally system is, basically when you get hit by an enemy, you have a certain amount of time to hit them back to recover a portion of your health. I didn't know that that existed, but now that I'm on my new game plus, I'm finding that it's a little bit easier, not just because I'm like insanely overpowered, I'm sure that's part of it, but because I know about the rally system, I know what weapons are best to use. The answer has always been there. It just took time to uncover it. And maybe this comes down to a matter of personal taste, but that is why I think that the Soulsborne series has the best gameplay, the better gameplay than Resident Evil. I would also say that in terms of gameplay, each Soulsborne game presents a semi-open world that has secrets hidden all over. There's secrets not only in terms of gameplay, in terms of what weapons there are, what's the best weapon to use against what enemy, the game doesn't explain anything to you, or the games don't explain much of anything to you, and that's why I like them, and that because it is an enigma. Each game is an enigma that forces you to explore it and forces you to respect it. And I don't think that in the same way I am as engrossed in discovering anything in Resident Evil as I am in discovering where certain items are in the Soulsborne, how to defeat certain enemies, how to find little hidden secrets. I just found out today after spending tens of hundreds of hours that at the end of the Orphan of Kos boss in Bloodborne, if you do a very specific thing, you get an extra cutscene. I didn't know about that. And I think that's why the communities for these games have really stayed alive for so long. Just in terms of it gives people something to talk about, and it gives people interesting things to discover on their own. It really gives the player a lot of agency, I would say. Much more than the Resident Evil games.
Resident Evil, in terms of gameplay, was something I outlined a lot in my main case. So I'm going to keep it brief. And I'm going to just talk about the evolution of gameplay. And that is that this franchise can go through different variations depending on what generation they're in. And what I mean by that is by the standards of the PlayStation 1 and back in the day, the best they could do were the tanky controls and the fixed camera. And as I mentioned in my main case, that actually added to the atmosphere. I'm not saying that the bad controls are great. I'm just saying it does somewhat add to the atmosphere. Like Riley mentions with Soulsborne, that being unsettled about if I can defeat this boss, oh no, I might die here. It adds to that. So I feel like that is a similar thing to say here. And of course, this game couldn't have those controls forever. It couldn't have that gameplay forever. It would be outdated. So we didn't get the over-the-shoulder camera view with Resident Evil 4. And by God, how great that was. Resident Evil 4, to this day, to a lot of people, is one of the best games of all time. And it's because of that. Admittedly, and I will admit, when this franchise messes up, I am not ashamed to do it, they kind of went a little too much into the QuickTime events. I will say that. But overall, what I think this game and its predecessors did so well was give that player the feeling of, I'm all alone, what the fuck am I gonna do? And even when the game would transition into the action-oriented versions, it still was a fun time. You had the same controls as Resident Evil 4. You had the same type of gameplay, but it all felt more fast-paced, I guess is the best way to put it. Admittedly, these aren't my games. They're not my favorite. I don't have much to say here, other than, again, there was a part where Chris Redfield punches a boulder into a thing of lava. That has to be mentioned every time. But then Resident Evil 6 and 7, you have the old school gameplay come back into play here, and I don't really know how much detail you want me to go in, because I feel like I would be retreading my main case. So I apologize there.
All right, so you both have good points of gameplay, especially, again, Resident Evil has been through so many, it would take you a good chunk of time to explain each iteration, how it's improved over its many, many, many years in circulation. So let's go to one of the big things that everybody would love about horror, atmosphere. That's like the biggest thing for any horror game. Your gameplay can be awful. Your creature designs have to be good, but they can be mediocre as long as you have good atmosphere. So Riley, please explain to me Soulsborne's atmosphere and why I should enjoy that far more than Resident Evil.
Yeah, so I think that the Soulsborne games have a better atmosphere than the Resident Evil games for the same reason that I think that they have better enemy design. And that is just that it is unique. I don't consider most of the Resident Evil games atmosphere to be that unique, but I consider the Soulsborne series to have very unique settings. For example, in Demon's Souls, again, this is a very unique setting. Well, it's not unique. It is unique in the sense that you don't see it often in the horror genre. And that is like a medieval high fantasy mixed with horror. I don't think that I've ever really seen that done in a serious way. I might have seen some things do that in a comedic way, but never in a serious way. And same with Bloodborne. Everything goes into the world design, and you can tell that it's really, really carefully thought about and planned out, and nothing really sticks out. In Bloodborne, you have the gothic architecture, you have it's dark most of the time, you have, you know, the different enemies running around, which adds to the horror. The music, let me just add, the music in Bloodborne is absolutely fantastic. Same with Demon's Souls. And so I'll try to keep this one a little bit more short. I think the sense of atmosphere comes in knowing in a Souls game that you are basically alone through most of your journey. And there's not much talking from NPCs, or definitely not from your character, and it is just you versus this world. And it adds, there's a reason every October or so I get a mood to play Bloodborne, because that mood perfectly, that atmosphere and mood perfectly complements, in my opinion, October and fall and autumn and Halloween time. It is just dripping with atmosphere.
I would like, not a rebuttal here, I kind of want to actually compliment here. This is weird. I kind of want to add to Riley's case.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's something interesting. Go ahead. I got to hear this.
I just want to say, I do think the atmosphere of the Soulsborne series, especially games like Dark Souls, that Lovecraftian look and just that environment, I think it's something that Resident Evil sort of shares with it, and that's that sense of being isolated.
Yeah,
like it feels like you have to get things right when you're playing those Soulsborne games, and it feels like you got to get things right when you're playing Resident Evil. Where you have to figure out what ammo to use. You got to figure out, okay, I know what's behind this door. I didn't kill that zombie. All right, so am I going to use my last remaining bullets on this, or am I going to just try to run by them? And I feel like that's a similar thing these two franchises have, and I think it's what makes them both so great, in my opinion. So that might be detrimental to me, but I just had to point that out there.
Well, thank you. Thank you for agreeing with my case.
Okay, it's called a clash, but yet somehow you two are getting along. I don't like this. I don't like it at all. No, sir, I don't like it. All right, so do you have anything for Resident Evil?
For the atmosphere?
Yes,
anything you want to throw out there? This was another thing. See, Michael threw a curveball at us this whole episode. I thought we'd be doing the main cases, and that would be it.
Yes.
And Michael had it planned out, and I really love it, like, to be honest with you, because it had us going off the cuff. So there was a lot of things in my main case I tried to go for with that atmosphere and gameplay. So going forward, I think I might try to be more vague-ish. But, yeah, I think with the atmosphere, it's just kind of what Riley was mentioning and what I was mentioning in a rebuttal. It's more so, you're stuck in this one place, right? And it's that feeling of claustrophobia. And you look at something like the Resident Evil 2 remake, and every room feels like it's just dark and dreary, and you don't know what's around the damn corner. And it's terrifying for that very reason. And as I mentioned in my rebuttal or compliments, I don't know what to call it, but having that limited arsenal in the early games and even in the newer games, Village is more lenient, I believe. I haven't had a chance to play Village, but I have seen a large majority of the game. But for the most part, the earlier titles in Resident Evil 7, it has that sense of, I don't have a lot to work with, so I need to know what's going on, and I need to be in the right places, I need to know what to use. And it all adds to that, you know, atmosphere of you're alone. You have to find a way to survive these terrible, horrifying creatures, whether it be zombies, whether it be dogs, whether it be a licker, whether it be just a infected family terrifying you, or whether that be a possessed doll.
Okay, well then. All right, so we're going to go ahead, wrap this up real quick, and I will make my final judgment. Riley, is there any last pieces of look at me that you would like to put in for Soulsborne? Born, gosh, dog. You think I'd be a big use to that by now.
I don't have anything particularly extra to add onto my case. The reason why I think that Soulsborne, I'm just going to recap every argument that I made. The reason I think Soulsborne is the better horror genre is because, in my opinion, it has a better track record as a series. It has better creature design, better atmosphere, and better gameplay. And this may just be opinion-based, but that's why I chose to defend the Soulsborne series over Resident Evil. So that's kind of my closing statement. I don't have much else to say, except for, I guess I'll just say really quick that thank you to my opponent for, you know, debating me. And also, I was one of those people that didn't really think that the Soulsborne genre was for me until I, you know, Bloodborne was free, I think, a while, like a long time ago now, on the PS Plus store, or on, sorry, PS Plus is like free games of the month. And I tried it, and it took a little bit, but it became my favorite game and favorite series of maybe all time. And so I'm just imploring you out there, if you don't think that the Soulsborne series is for you, just please give it a try. It'll be frustrating at first, but I promise you it will be worth it.
I once again want to ask the listeners and Judge Mosley a question. What is the better horror game franchise? Is it Soulsborne or is it Resident Evil? And to that, I also want to say, look at the Resident Evil franchise. Look at the iconic moments it creates throughout the years. Think about the people who still remember to this day when they played as kids and when they encountered the Licker for the first time. And they will see that cutscene again. And they will go, that is one of the most terrifying moments I've ever seen. And that's, again, I made this in my main case, but that's what this franchise does. It creates moments, and it's why we see a movie like Resident Evil, Welcome to Raccoon City, and people, for whatever you think of that trailer and how the CGI looks, there are still people who are like, I remember that from the games. That looks awesome, because of that very reason. And it's why this franchise has survived as much as it has. Riley has made some fantastic points. I'm not here to tear my opponent down. The Soulsborne franchise is amazing. And the Resident Evil franchise has had its own warts and bumps over the years. But there's something to say that this franchise hit such a low and it came back. And it's one of the best franchises out there today. Look at Resident Evil Village when it released, and how much buzz it got, and how successful it was when it dropped, and how much money it has made. That goes to show that this franchise, even through all the warts and through all the issues it's had, through terrible games like Umbrella Corps, I found the game I was looking for. If you're listening, look up Umbrella Corps because this is one of the most dog shit games I've ever seen in my life. But even with games like that under their belt, they have games like Resident Evil 7 Biohazard it feels like a little bit of a love letter to fans of the series. And Resident Evil Village kind of adds on to that a bit. And it feels like this franchise has a second wind all of a sudden.
Okay. All right. So I guess all that leaves is for me to make my final assessment. So with that said, I want to throw my hat into the ring for a second. Silent Hill is better than both of those franchises when it comes to horror. So just, I'm team Silent Hill, especially The Room. Oh my goodness. The Room was like the first real Silent Hill game that I got into. Like, I played some of the other ones, but The Room, for some reason, like, captured me. And it was great. Talk about atmosphere and controls and whatnot. But, you know, that's not here because in reality, I'm a little baby when it comes to horror games. So I never tend to actually finish them, but I did enjoy my time with Silent Hill. So with that said, oh my goodness. Oh, I had to go through all the consideration. Actually put your final moments, your not even a real rebuttal, but like your big final speech. I used that as a distraction so I could think about what you were saying earlier. So I was just trying to draw this out while I thought about who made the better argument because they were both really good. So now my time is up. I can't delay this any further. So with that, I do have to agree with Riley that just the atmosphere and the creature design alone is just unsettling throughout all beliefs when it comes to the Souls games. And it's despite the point that I'm not a fan of the Souls series, I will give it that. Especially Bloodborne, the one game I did try to actually play. That was just, the atmosphere alone made me want to play, and it's a good-looking game. And so, like, those are one thing. Those things are gorgeous, especially with the Blue Point making the remake recently for the PS5. For, I think it was it Demon's Souls that got the remake?
Yeah, Demon's Souls.
Yeah, that game just looks absolutely gorgeous, and I'm mad that I'm not going to play it because I'm not good at Souls games, even though I do try to play them. With all that said, taking both history into consideration, as much as it pains me to say this, I do have to go with Soulsborne. Ah, I had it once. So woo! I think Riley made the better case for her game.
Hell yeah.
I wish I could say I was disappointed, but Riley did a great job. I feel like I did fumble the ball, and it's my own fault.
No, it's not that you fumbled the ball. Like, you had a lot of great reasons, and I did keep up with it, but when it came down to atmosphere and creature design, to be honest, what Riley said was kind of true. We do get our zombies and we do get our mix of creatures when it comes, like I said earlier, the parasites of, what was it, Resident Evil, was it 6 or 5 that did the parasites? I think it was 5.
5, for sure.
Yeah.
Resident Evil 6 had the 3 different stories.
That's right, yeah.
Chris, Leon, and Wesker's son.
The new guy who doesn't pop up anymore. Wait, didn't he pop up once more?
Yep, because that's how bad it was.
No, he popped up once more.
But it was still fun. That's the part I was trying to go. It's like, yeah, you can still find enjoyment out of it, though.
Yeah.
Even though it's lackluster.
Yeah, like, they were fun. Like you said, punching boulders is just great. That, when I was sitting there mashing a button, I'm like, what am I playing anymore? But it was enjoyable. But as for a straight horror, I do think Soulsborne has the atmosphere and the creature design that makes horror games horror. Although, again, like I said, I'm team Silent Hill because Silent Hill has the best creatures, but hey, that's just me. So I do have to go with Soulsborne.
Before we turn, because after we're done here, Riley is going to actually close up shop because she's the winner. But before we do that, I do want to mention that we originally, for this episode, had a basic, like, okay, we're going to do opening statements, we're going to do a main case, and then Michael's going to pick. And we had no idea that Michael had the categories ready. And I think that added to it.
I agree.
Because because we had these prepared statements, and I thought both of us had very good points. But then when Michael came in and he was like,
Monkey Wrench.
All right, well, tell me about atmosphere. And I was like, shit, all right, well, I don't have anything prepared for that. I'm having to think. I'm having to be like, all right, I don't want to copy myself. I thought it was very good to just, like, don't tell us what you're doing. Just ask what the category is and have us actually have to react to it in real time and not give us that. It's kind of that good mix between us having something prepared and reading off our documents here. And actually just speaking from the heart there. So really good job by you, Michael. Really good job by you as well, Riley. You made a pretty good case. I still biasly thought mine was better. We will see what the listeners think.
Oh man, I don't know. There's a lot of Souls fans out there.
There is. All right, you want me to close up this episode?
Yep, go ahead and close up shop however you want to.
Cool.
All you gotta do is do the what are we working on and outro.
So I don't have a winner's speech prepared because I honestly didn't think I was going to win. But I'd like to thank my opponent, Taylor.
Riley says as she like rips up her winner's speech, like I didn't have anything prepared. I don't want to seem like an asshole here.
I would like to thank my opponent, Taylor. You came with some great arguments. And I would also like to add that I do enjoy the Resident Evil series. And thank you to the Honorable Judge Mosley for adjudicating this case in my favor. So let's close up shop. What are we working on and where can people find you? Michael, what are you working on and where can people find you?
Funny enough, I am actually working on a software review for Animaze, I believe is what it's called. Animaze. It's a face recognition technology that you can get on Steam that uses your webcam to track your facial movements with your avatar on screen. So a lot of people are doing VTubers and the like. So there are people jumping in on this, and I get a chance to review one of said softwares. So I get to do that soon.
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah, it's pretty nice. And as for finding me, you can find me on Twitter at @M_MOSLEY_JR. If you find a weirdo in a fox hoodie, congratulations, you are in the right place.
Great. Taylor, what are you working on and where can people find you?
I'm working on this podcast here. I'm working on Nerds Talk Movies. You can find new episodes of this podcast every Monday night at 8 p.m. Eastern. You can find new episodes of Nerd Talk Movies every Friday night at 8 p.m. Eastern.
Well, with that being said, you can find me on Twitter at @Logue_Riley. I'm not working on much. I'm just working on this podcast. And you can also find me in the Nerd Stash Discord server. So yeah, let's get out of here. I would like to thank both of my co-hosts, Taylor and Michael, for joining me this week. And I would like to thank the listener for listening. And we will be back next week to talk about some gaming news as usual.